What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
I'm recording. I have both of my earbuds in. Hopefully they're not too loud. I'll make sure your volume...
I'm also recording. It's all happening. We just, you know, we just had Isaac Mizrahi on our YouTube live, ladies and gentlemen and other. Go over to YouTube to dance and stuff. And you can watch our chitty chitty chat bang bang with Isaac Mizrahi about many things, including Madonna, Faye Dunaway, Eartha Kitt.
Well, mostly just old famous ladies, which is, you know, it's a passion of yours and Isaac's, which was great. I was really more of an onlooker.
We are very passionate about les femmes. So you can all go check that out. And then here we are now with the podcast, which is, which we'll be having our guest shortly. It is the last day of the semester at Bard, and I am burnt to a crispy piece of toast.
Congratulations. So what happens now? The kids go to the living room for summer break. What happens?
I guess that's what's going to happen. I'm not sure where all of the kids are going or how we're even going to reconvene, but I do know that I need to write about all of them and grade them. And this semester I had 52 students. So it's a lot of crite sheets, as our guest, who is going to be joining us shortly, knows all about, because we work at the same institution.
That's correct. I think you're going to have to limit yourself to 2 sentences a student, and you can't, and no more, no less, because you don't want to do favorites.
Right. I'm not really that kind of queen. So, but the thing is that I take notes on all my students throughout the semester. So I really...
But there must be a couple students where there's really nothing to say, you know?
I don't feel that way. There is something to say about every student. I've been with them for not only the semester, but, you know, we all switched to online in a pandemic, and there was a lot to discuss. And I really was moved by how amazing students, at least my students, dealt with it. But I also felt fortunate that I've taught online before. So I was like not completely in the dark about that. And we'll see what it's like next semester. It's supposedly we're all going to be meeting. I wish that we were doing... Notre Dame has already put into place that they're going to start their semester earlier and end on Thanksgiving, which I think is wise, because it takes care of people traveling during Thanksgiving. And that way, if you start in August, you can end in Thanksgiving.
But are kids gonna go to Notre Dame, like the campus?
Yeah. Campus opens at Notre Dame starting in August. They're just pushing their whole semester earlier, which is wise, because the next giant peak, if this tracks like every other pandemic that's happened that we have on record, will be in November. That's when more people will be infected than this time.
Okay.
So Notre Dame was like, let's go with science and start our semester in August and in September. That's what Notre Dame sounds like, by the way.
And then for Thanksgiving,
everyone just leave. But I do not think that's what Bard has planned. I think we're just planning on coming back. But we'll see. You know, this is a real, ladies and gentlemen, this is a real one day at a time. If you've never heard that expression, I suggest putting it in your corner pocket and pulling it out.
Well, I'm glad you have some tasks for the upcoming days.
You're glad that I have some what?
Tasks.
Sorry, I was drinking booze. I was drinking booze and taking a few Xanax for semester's end treat, JK. But I have a lot of tasks. We're also making the Guggenheim film, which is, I think, is only we're making something too long, so we'll have to shave it down. Just give a scene from it.
Nobody wants to be presented with a digital video to experience that's more than 5 minutes. It's torture.
At this point, you feel. Well, we're making a film, so it's a different thing.
I guess.
Well, you know, but Jeremy and I, it's like, we're not gonna just, we couldn't just, like, make a video. It ended up getting too complicated, and so therefore it's turning into a film.
Ours is,
hilarious. I love it.
But it's actually, it's time-consuming in a way that I had not anticipated, where it feels like it may never be done, but it has to be, quite frankly.
It's gonna have to be done. Yours is gonna have to be done, and Pam's is gonna have to be done, and mine is gonna have to be done, and then that's that.
And then that's the end of the world.
Well, no, that's just the Guggenheim presentations on their platform, which leads to another, if you're looking for more online dance performance, theater even viewing, or video work, Guggenheim Work in Process has commissioned many artists, Reed and Harriet, myself, Pama Tama included, and we are all on their, we haven't submitted ours yet, but Reed, and neither has Reed and Harriet, but we will be submitting them. You can see them there.
One day.
What was your day like today, Reed?
Today, I woke up and I made a fruit salad for breakfast with blueberries and grapefruit and nectarine. And then I took Cunningham class. I actually started to make a habit of arriving late at Instagram Cunningham class, which means that I'm like, oh, it's time for class. And then I start to move chairs and put on my dance clothes. And so then I'm hurry. I missed the bounces, so then I'm kind of cramming things in, whatever. It's like as if you arrived late to class, but you know, there's no arriving. And then I did a little work. Oh, this guy came to measure some windows in this house because he's putting up some window treatments.
Are you in the main house now?
No, I'll never be there.
Oh, okay.
I live, this is my own house. I love having my own house.
It's true.
And then I worked a little bit on this dress I'm altering for Jane that I've been working on for way too long because I keep putting it off. And then, what did I do? I did something. Oh, I took a yoga class. I watched a Bon Appetit video where they rate different foods that are sort of contentious. And it's kind of it. It wasn't a lot. Oh, I made lunch. I had avocado and tomatoes and mayonnaise on focaccia.
It sounds like a very lovely day. It sounds like
not that bad.
A very lovely choir day.
Super choir.
Well, what'd I'm glad to hear it. Today was the last day, so they were closing statements to students, and then I began working on getting all of those grades done, as well as I was reminded once again by our incredible administrator, who Lindsay knows, Jen, that I needed to get my travel reimbursements in, which I am really bad at, as we've already talked about when we had Aaron Markey on our live YouTube channel. Receipts, reimbursements, medical billing, as Neil Beasley likes to call it. He really, anytime I have something that needs to be submitted, Neil Beasley just calls it medical billing, because I once said, can you help me with my medical billing? which just meant, you know, sending it into the whatever insurance company to get reimbursed. I can't, all those things are just absolute torture for this air, water, fire sign. There's no earth in my chart that's I'll go get that thing done. So I'm just more in feelings, writing, reading, viewing. But if it comes,
does our guest have earth in their sign?
I don't know. Let's find out. Leishman, yes. Other. This is a great segue. Are you recording, Lindsay? Is it on?
I hope I'm doing it right. So I've got my voice memo going on my other device.
Yeah, you should see these red bars happening as you speak.
Yes.
Then you're doing it. You're doing it.
Then it's happening. Leisha and the other, we're here with old friend of Reed's and oldish friend of mine, Lindsay Clark. Lindsay and I are colleagues at Bard Collage, but Reed and Lindsay, you two have known each other since you were six.
Uh-huh. No.
It feels like it at this point.
It's not true, but it is a long, long time since we were teens, and now we're not even close to teens
anymore. I think I was 16 when I first met
sounds
you.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. We're going to have to find Reed, you're going to have to find a photo of the two of you as teens.
I have. Yeah. We have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we amazing.
Plenty.
Amazing.
But the problem is I don't... Lindsay, if you have any at your house, that'd be good, because I'm not in my house.
Oh, right. I mean,
it
is...
And as we know...
It's a time... It was a time that I don't love to remember in the form of pictures. When I look at those...
So did you find them?
No, they're in a box, like deep in a box. On a deep shelf. Mm-hmm.
Just like your feelings and memories about it, deep in a box.
That's right.
A box, deep in a box.
I mean, maybe... We can open that box up easily.
Well, we're going to open it up. We're going to open it up tonight a little bit.
What'd you say about Jacob?
I said have Jacob do it. Have him go and pick a photo. You don't have to pick it. Have Jacob pick it, and then he can...
What are we doing with the photo?
We're going to put it
on
our
Instagram.
No. No.
People want to see you and Reed as teens, as bebes. As bebe ballerinas.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, thank God. Memory lane is all I want to do. I've been going back as far as I can in my iPhoto library and just kind of seeing photos and then mailing them to people.
Uh-huh. Reed did send me some that really did make me laugh, but I recently...
I did it to Lindsay as well.
It's fun.
Those were good. I mean, that made me feel bad because I looked so young and happy.
We were having a pretty good time, but also, like, it was all, like, I don't know, were we that... I remember, like, I was madly busy with school and dancing, and you were also, like... Well, you had just finished school at that time, right? A couple years in.
Okay, so what happened? How did, for those of people who don't know your relationship, I do know it. Why don't you explain to our listeners how you two met?
Okay.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
Okay, what do you have in your mouth? I can hear it.
I have a invisible aligners.
Yeah, are they working?
Yeah, I'm on tray number two.
Nice.
It's a real treat for our listeners for the next 14 weeks.
That's true.
But they'll get to hear Reed with a different, with something in his mouth.
Sure.
Yeah. Just like a little extra,
It's not
sound.
Great.
Yeah, okay.
I may figure it out one day, but it's only 15 weeks, so.
Right. Oh yeah. So people, and we've already done 1 week, I think, so people only have another 14 weeks to listen to Reed sounding like that.
It'll be a breeze.
Yeah. It'll as Judy Dench says to Cate Blanchett in Notes on a Scandal, it'll fly by when she talks about her prison time.
So let's go back to the 90s.
All right.
Work.
Well,
I love the 90s.
Reed, as you know, my memory's bad. So
I'll
fill
in the blanks.
You fill it all in.
But, I mean, between you and I, it's truly Swiss cheese. It's unbelievable.
Well, and then I can just make stuff up as it goes along.
Yeah. Okay, so I first met Reed at Pacific Northwest Ballet in the summer of
1999.
Here we go. Okay.
Yep. I was 18 years old, 1999.
Work.
Well, I was there for my first summer in 97. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
I was there for 5 summers.
Wow.
So I met Reed...
Because you grew up as a ballerina.
Yes. I went to North Carolina School of the Arts for high school. So
with last week's guest, they were same generation.
Megan?
Uh-huh.
Yes. But she's younger than me.
Yeah.
What's so wild, when I had to, go to Facebook to find an old photo for Philip Tarantula's birthday, I found a photo, Lindsay, of you and Megan LaCrone and I hugging at that Robin's house in the Hamptons.
That was so strange. Yeah. Otherworldly.
So I can post that photo.
Okay.
Wow.
Megan had just, shocked. Of course, sprained her ankle. She was, in a clog and was like, I think I just sprained my ankle. And you were like, oh, no. And there was that guy. I'm not going to get into too much of this. Anyhow.
Don't bother.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Lindsay.
Okay, so.
So you went to NCSA.
So I went to NCSA for high school, and I went to School of American Ballet and Pacific Northwest Ballet for my summers, and I met Reed at P&B, and my really kind of my first memory of Reed is walking up.
Oh God,
walking
I'm scared.
Up the hill, like walking up the hill to our house with ice bags strapped around your ankles. You were just constantly icing.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
I have no interest in icing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you took care of it when you were young.
Right. And also sitting in the conference room and having lunch in the conference room.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Matthew Prescott.
Oh my God, Matthew Prescott.
Because yes. You guys look so similar.
We were truly like fraternal twins, and then we diverged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, what do you want to know?
Okay, so you go to NCSA, and then you go to PNB.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell this part. So then, I joined the professional division class, which is like the trainee division at Pacific Northwest Ballet, where you take classes as a group, but you also rehearse and perform with the company in smaller roles. And Lindsay joined our class my second year there after our second summer together at PNB. And that summer we really bonded because we had our friend group kind of became one, which was like Laurel and Mary Mack and Garrett and Courtney. And so then we started the second year together. And I remember you and I, Lindsay, we were back in town before everybody else by a couple days. And I remember going over to your apartment because Lindsay was living with Mary Mack and Laurel in a one bedroom apartment. And,
three people and in a one bedroom apartment.
And I remember excited and we were like, I don't remember exactly what we were doing, but I was like, wow, I have a new friend. I'm so glad Lindsay is here for PDs. And then the beginning of that PD year, it wasn't a great class. It was a complicated class because of the personalities in the room. And Lynn, we were working on Sleeping Beauty, and we were all tasked with learning various roles in Sleeping Beauty. And I remember that was a big turning point for you. And do you want to tell that story?
Yes, because my role was as the wet nurse, which
that's
is
correct.
A woman who walks on stage to hold the baby Aurora,
right.
Literally to nurse her. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what a wet nurse is?
Yeah. She's the one, like, I'll do it. Because the queen's like,
I'll do it.
The queen's like, I'm not in. I can't deal with her on my boobs.
It was a crushing blow.
Yeah, because, you know, normal for a lot of the students, you were learning, like, Polonaise or, like, Dryad. Or, I don't know, they're not called Dryads. Anyways. Other parts, like more ballerina-y corps de ballet parts.
I learned no parts.
Yeah.
I didn't, so I think I went to one rehearsal. in which I did nothing. Like, they didn't need to call on the wet nurse to, like, practice.
Right.
Whatever it was I was going to practice. And then that, I think that's pretty much when I left.
And yeah, you were very abruptly were like, I'm leaving. And we were all like, huh? Because, you know, we were all so conditioned to this subservient behavior where it was just like, you do whatever they tell you to do and you continually like show face, or like if they're disappointed with you in one regard, then you show emphatically that you're working on it. You're like, I'm in Pilates and I'm in physical therapy and I'm good enough to be in your company. And they're always watching you through the windows because the whole building was made of glass.
Or from the balcony.
Yeah. So Lindsay announced that she was leaving and I was stunned. But in the end, obviously, it was like a very wise choice because so many of us just stuck around and were miserable. Forever.
Well, I had just come out of NCSA, which was torture. Like, I think, you know, I think it wasn't just the P&B experience that I was like, oh no, this is too much. It was coming out of 3 years of really, really difficult situations.
Especially, and you had a complicated relationship with Melissa Hayden.
I did. I was in all of her pieces, and it would be the same pattern would play out in every one. So at the beginning of the rehearsal process, she would say things like, why can't everyone do it like Lindsay? Lindsay's the best. You know, I mean, she actually sounded like that. And then slowly, I would start to become the whipping boy, and I would get demoted, and I would be moved from one part to another. I never actually got kicked out of a piece, but at the end, it was always like, you're garbage. You got egg in your face, you know, you're eliminated. Stuff like that.
Wait, did Melissa Hayden ever say you're eliminated?
Oh yeah. So when we were doing Serenade with
this is so good, because we've had guests on before from NCSA and have had like some Hayden stories, but like I've never heard you're eliminated. This is incredible.
Yeah. We were doing Serenade. We were Carolina Ballet had just been formed. I don't know if my junior year or senior year. I think it was my senior year, and they needed extra core to fill out Serenade, and so they hired us. I think they actually paid us, it was the first rehearsal that we had with Carolina. We had been rehearsing just the school kids, and then Carolina Ballet came in, and we had done a run through, I think. I don't know. It doesn't matter. And I was sort of like at the back of the studio, and Melissa came from the charging from the front of the studio all the way back. But you know, I'm really tall for yes. People who don't know. And Melissa is very petite, or was very petite. And she comes charging from the front of the room, pushes me up against the back wall, against the bar. Yeah. And she, you know, she's a mess. I mean, it's really sad. It's sad now, but it wasn't sad then. It was just grotesque terrifying. And awful. Yeah, and terrifying.
Yeah.
And she's spitting all over herself, and she's just screaming at me, you're eliminated! Eliminated! With all these company members watching, I mean, it was horrible and also totally predictable. And I was so hardened at that point that I just left the room.
I have a question. Like, were you eliminated from the piece?
No. She never followed. It was just a show. It was like a show for the company members, I think.
Right.
You know, it was like a power play. And then later, I think I just, like, came back into the room. I don't remember. There was a time at School of the Arts where every Friday, so we would rehearse our like big stage productions in the little theater in DeMille. And I remember that like by the time we got to Friday, I would be falling apart in the wings, like just unable to keep it together. But it was really important that Miss Hayden never saw you cry.
Right.
You know, it was like, because it's kind of a similar personality to other people that I've worked with, where like when you start to show your weakness, right. I'm putting that in quotes.
Meaning that you're a vulnerable human being.
Right. Then they just get in there with their talons, right. And start,
right.
Tearing you apart. So, yeah. She wanted pushback. She wanted strength, even if it was totally, you know, fake. So by the time I got to PNB, all it took was, please be our wet nurse, for me to say.
And you were like, I'm good.
I gotta go.
Yeah, but not only like I'm good, but also like she was good. So like she understood that like this was below her abilities.
Yeah.
So.
No, but what I mean with like I'm good, I've had my fill of abuse.
I know.
And and the fill of a very specific, I mean, it's so cliche.
But I wouldn't say I've had my fill, because I was not feeling like I am worthy. I'm going to go, you know, do my thing somewhere else where other people love me. No, I was totally crushed.
I meant your fill of disappointment and abuse. I did not mean your fill of like having had a feeling of success by the measure of the people on the others who are not you measuring it.
But I certainly had no sense of worthiness. It was just like, if I don't leave now, I'm going to die.
Right.
Right.
That was basically it.
And so where'd you go right away?
I went home.
To Santa Cruz.
And then I moved to New York, mm-hmm. in February.
Of?
And I...
2001.
Thank you, Reed. And I moved in with a woman who was a student in our class at PNB. I moved in with her mother.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
Moved in with her mother, like into her old room at her mother's apartment in Stuyvesant Town. And I worked for Great Performances as a catering person. And I also worked at Steps on Broadway. And I was just like really sick and depressed. It was a bad situation. I didn't know what I was doing. Oh, and I auditioned for Juilliard.
Oh, yeah, but you had been waitlisted at Juilliard the previous year, so you had good reason to be like, I'm going to go to Juilliard next year.
Right. They waitlisted me the previous year, called me in the summer to say, we decided to take a man instead of you. So it was between you and
It's really good that at this point, we can laugh about these things.
Oh, God.
Well, what are you going to do, you know? So I auditioned for Juilliard again. I got cut, which is not surprising. I was in a really bad place. I was, like, going, you know, catering, doing these big catering events on... We go, like, go to the Statue of Liberty. Did you ever do one of those, Reed?
I did Ellis Island.
Yeah, Ellis Island. And then you get back
home. I'm sorry.
You know,
I'm just laughing about picturing a catering event in the Statue of Liberty.
No.
Where it's like, okay, everyone, they're coming up to the torch, so let's get those. Yeah. Let's everyone light your flambés. Okay.
Don't drop any champagne flutes, you guys. Exactly. There's no stairs.
Exactly. Ellis Island. Okay, yeah.
Ellis Island. You know, you're in your plastic tux, and just trying to work as little as possible. And then at the end of the night...
And steal as much food as possible. Ugh.
And then, and then the end of the night, they feed you all of the delicious food. And then you ride back on the ferry. And then right next to the apartment that I was living in was a Dunkin' Donuts that was open 24/7. And I would buy some donuts and go home and eat them and just feel so sad about my life.
And then go audition for Juilliard the next morning.
Right.
Okay, and so then what? I think before you left PNB or in a phone call, I think I was like, you should maybe think about also auditioning for Purchase to keep all your...
I think that was maybe when we were talking later and I didn't know what to do. You said, I loved Purchase. I went there for a year and a half. I loved it.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Yeah. So I auditioned for Purchase in a snowstorm.
Romance.
In which the van broke down and this woman who was auditioning for the MFA program got out and slipped and fell and hurt herself on the ice. She did not end up going to the program. But I did because Reed told me to.
Wow.
And I really had nothing else.
I'm not apologizing for this. I think it worked out in a way.
I think it did too. I mean, it was a milder repeat of NCSA. And I was ready for the conservatory life in a way that I think a lot of people find it hard to go into conservatory for college. And it was just, it was so much easier than NCSA, and also felt very familiar, in kind of like the workload and the routine. And
were you and Stewie in the same class?
No, he was a freshman when I was a senior.
Oh, Stuart Singer.
Wait, is that true? No.
Junior.
He was a freshman when I was a junior, yeah.
I would have really laughed. He'd be like, no, he was a freshman when I was a senior. No, wait, we were in the same class, yeah. Just because I'm liking some of the shattering effects of these memories. Okay.
Oh, God.
So then you did Purchase. Who did your senior solo?
A man named István Juhos, who I met.
You guys.
I met him in Rotterdam. I spent a semester abroad in Rotterdam, and he was an ex-Batsheva person. And so he made me a solo that then I performed a lot. You know, it's like a group show, obviously. And one of the other women who was in the senior show with me, she had an actual Ohad Naharan piece set on her. Oh, and it was essentially the exact same piece.
Oh, no. So sad.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So I got the ripoff version.
Wow.
There's many.
But you made friends, but you got to make friends with, you made friends with Zvonimir because you went to Rotterdam.
That's right. I didn't know who you were talking about for a second when you said that name. But yes.
That's right, yes. My good friend who you just said. That's right.
Lindsay used to read me letters that Zvonimir would write to her, or emails that were absolute comedy, screaming, crying comedy. So good.
Wow, I wonder if I have any of those.
Now, where is Zvonimir from?
I honestly couldn't tell you anything about
Reed,
him.
I really think the extent of their friendship is your memory and some emails you remembered, and I think it has left... Watching Lindsay's face when you said his name spoke volumes, because it was really...
Confusion.
It was like, blank. I'm glad that friendship happened for you, Reed, via me. But I myself might not have been there.
I do... I remember his name, and I remember what he looked like.
Lindsay,
anyway,
we meet so many people. You know what I mean? Like, what are you supposed to do? Do you know? So you do this OHAD knockoff, of which, you know, men, there's so many. They still go on. We're always surrounded by that. And it ends up being okay. And then
I graduated from college and I moved into an apartment in Crown Heights with my good friend Elise and Stuart. And there were a couple other people that, like, came in and out of the house. But Stuart graduated early because he was in Bill T. Jones. And we just kind of, like, lost our minds together in that apartment in the most wonderful way.
You two will always... You and Stuart and Reed will always feel like siblings to me. Like...
That's nice.
The three of you have, like, a very... When I... re-met Reed, it was very, the interaction was like, oh, the three of them are siblings.
Well, it's long and it's complicated and it's deep.
Yeah,
siblings.
Yeah, we've been through a lot together.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel so close to Reed because we share these really traumatic experiences.
Yeah, you share the real trauma ballet experiences, and you didn't. But you were getting.
But that also carried on. Like, it wasn't just a ballet thing, you know? Well, so, and Stuart as well.
Yeah. And, I, you know, well. Lynn, our lives are about to reconverge as the story moves forward beyond college, because as Lindsay was graduating Purchase, I was starting to get towards the end of my ballet career when I was like, this is ridiculous. Right. I can't be in ballet companies anymore. I have to live in New York. And I was seeing, you know, Lindsay and Stuart and others periodically when I'd go back home for summer break. And then at a certain point, I was like, I have to just now live in New York. And this is when, Lindsay, you were living in Crown Heights in the other apartment where you burned a hole in the rug. Remember that?
Wow, watching Lindsay's face on that one, too. This is an incredible duet, by the way. It's really... I pretty much feel I could write this show and people would feel it was durational.
Newport. That's
I helped you try to camouflage the hole by carving out a square of the rug and then replacing it with the same rug.
And please, for anyone who's listening, and Jack, you should know that the room was almost pitch black. Like, there were no windows in it. The carpet was this, like, dark office carpet. There's no way anyone would have even noticed.
How did you do it? With a cigarette?
I thought about this. It fell over.
I see.
I thought, the wound. I thought you were saying, how'd you fix it? But I was going to say, I remembered a chapter in one of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books where... In Farmer Boy, where it's a book about her husband, where he throws shoe polish against the wall while the parents are away, and then they're all flipped out because it damages the wallpaper. And then his older sister carefully cuts out a square of the wallpaper and then replaces it and matches up the print with a scrap from upstairs, and the parents don't notice.
And that's how you patched
exactly what you did.
This spooky office rug in a pitch black room that Lindsay lived in.
Exactly.
Yeah, it had all the little like plastic
fibers.
Threads,
mm-hmm.
And he took like a chopstick and was like poking them in.
And poked it. It sounds well. Reed's very crafty.
For an extensive amount of time.
Reed is
felting.
Reed's very crafty and industrious. I remember once coming and we were doing some show and I was crying because of some reason and. Reed was like, well, you have a hole in the bottom of your sock. I'll fix that and then you'll feel better.
Oh, darn your sock.
It was, but he fixed this hole in the bottom of my sock and I did feel a little better. I stopped crying. He was like, okay, stop crying now.
Wait, Lindsay, what did you do after graduation? Like, professionally?
Well, first I went to the yard.
Oh my God.
You know, when I was talking to Jacob about that I was... gonna do this interview with you guys, and he was like, you have so many good stories, and I was like, yeah, but all of my stories are about other people's embarrassing moments, and I can't
But you were there, Lindsay. You were there.
It's very lame you. It's very lame you and my brilliant friend, Lindsay. It's very like you observed and watched. You must read my brilliant friend. It's so important, Lindsay. Lainu. You really have to. I'll send them to you if need be. I do remember some stories, and the one picturing, because I remember seeing Rite of Spring at Lincoln Center and really being like, wow, I love that. And then Reed and I reconnected, and he was like, Ev, I got a story for you, and told me about someone getting lost in the fabric and someone laughing on stage during it. And I wish I could have seen that show. That is
that was the better show.
Well, really, Lindsay, cool. How many years were you kind of roughing it as a freelancer in the city before you got the Shenway job?
Oh, none. I mean, I graduated when, where are we? College. Okay. Graduated, went to the yard, moved to the city. And then in January, the January after that audition for Shenway.
Okay.
And then, so that all happened pretty fast.
Right. And I would have, I guess, then joined the company either 4 months later or a year and 4 months later. What was it?
I think a year and 4 months later, because what happened was I was brought on as an unpaid apprentice.
Naturally.
I don't know what the word.
Naturally.
Oh, naturally. And I immediately went on tour. Like, I was hired and a week later I went on tour and performed.
Wait, Lindsay, I'm so sorry to go back. I know that we're now attached to this chronology, but will you tell the story of right when you joined Shenway and the miracle money came to you?
That was definitely after the first tour.
Oh, okay.
It was after a period of not being paid.
Right.
So I was working full-time for Shenway without being paid.
How did that happen?
That's how it goes. That's how it used to go.
That's how it went, and I said yes.
Yeah.
So
we would work full time as a dancer, but not be paid
for 8 weeks.
Yeah,
Right,
8 weeks. I got stipend on tour, you know, for my food, and I don't know how many weeks. It must have been at least a month into it, if not more. It was before I got my first paycheck. Stuart and I were walking to St. Mark's Church. And I had $0, and we were about a block away, and all of a sudden we are just surrounded by $20 bills flying through the air. I don't know where they came from, but it was like a money grab. Like, and there was no one else on the street. There was no one else trying to pick up the money. It was just the two of us, like, frantically grabbing at the money and laughing and feeling euphoric and also so confused. And then, basically, I kept all the money because Stuart had a job.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope Stuart gave you whatever he caught, because he did.
I mean, I think he was a little upset, but
but he actually had a, Bill was paying him.
Understandably.
But it was enough to pay the rent. Correct.
It was. It was like the exact amount I needed to pay my rent.
It's truly a miracle.
Are you serious? It was the exact amount?
I'm serious. It was.
That's one of those incredible New York stories that people, if they read in a book, would be like, that's too broad. And it's like, it actually happened.
They were brand new $20
bills. Must have flown out of a truck that was going to an ATM. Do you know what I mean?
An armored truck? Just like leaking?
Yeah, some queen didn't like close the back door correctly. So then you're with Shenway being unpaid for, what was the contract like? You're going to work for me for 8 weeks before I pay you, and then I'll pay you.
Yeah, wow.
So
and
you
there
get two,
were
they
two,
get 2 months of free labor out of you.
And it's trial.
Yeah, there were
and
two
they,
other.
They don't have to hire you when that's over. They can
no, there were two.
You.
There were two other people who were selected from the audition that I was in that didn't get hired. So we went to Rome. We did this Midwest tour. We went to three cities in the Midwest. I think that's when Kate fell on her head. There was a lot of, the work is really taxing.
Yes.
And stressful. And so there's a lot of opportunity for injury. And then, yeah, and then I remember I was in Sphi's class when the executive director, or the, maybe it was just a manager at the time, called me, and I think her name was Patty, and she told me that they were going to give me a contract, and I went back into class, and I told Stuart, and the class was just starting, and I cried through pliés.
Because you had a job.
Because it was really validating.
Yeah.
It was the thing that I had been needing.
Yeah. And Shen Wei at that moment in time was like a great company and he was making great work and their touring was really, I don't want to say great, but it was prestigious.
Other people thought it was cool.
Yeah.
For me, the reality of touring was very hard. Yeah. I couldn't handle the jet lag. I couldn't handle the lack of sleep combined with the stress. It was, well, Reed can tell you. I mean, I
Reed's
just,
told me every, stories for sure.
Every tour, I would just lose my mind.
And oh, no, Reed hasn't told me stories about you.
Really fun
but Reed has told me stories about just the company and
touring
the
with Lindsay. Touring with Lindsay to Europe was complicated because you had and have continued to have, you know, food restrictions. And so, you know, in,
I mean,
in
no,
Europe,
not anymore.
It was just like
so...
bread and cheese. And Lindsay was
we were always in Italy.
She was like, I guess I'm not eating. And then also you were like, how come none of these places have trees? It's just all these stone old cities. And I was like,
oh my God. I hated, and I don't know if I would still feel this way, but at the time, the architecture, this is going to sound so bizarre, but the stone interiors of the buildings were so, so oppressive to me.
One time, like, it was like a very close group of dancers. We kind of all loved each other, but it was like a complicated group where, like, Lindsay couldn't eat. She was always exhausted. Joan couldn't eat and her hips were broken. And, like, Daichin was out of his mind. It was like a lot of things at once. I remember being in Barcelona and we were in a big studio rehearsing, which was always nice. And someone said, oh, can you shut the curtain on the mirror because we're about to rehearse? And Lindsay was like, I'll do it. She gets up and we all were sort of observing her, and she starts pulling a curtain, and she walks probably like 40 feet across the whole room pulling this curtain, and we're all like, what on earth? Because Lindsay was pulling it was like on a track, she was pulling probably 12 inches of curtain that was separate from all the rest of the curtain, but she didn't feel it, so she just traverse the entire space, like slowly trudging across the room, not in fact pulling any curtain at all. It was
like as if I was pulling 50 pounds
but
of fabric.
But you only had grabbed like some weird little bit of
a sliver
of curtain that wasn't attached to the rest.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, we all cried with laughter through most of class because that was like how we coped with the exhaustion and stress of the whole thing.
That was such a good moment.
Yeah,
that
was great.
The laughter stories
so
that
hard.
I've heard come out of the company have always made me laugh really hard. It's, I mean, the pressure, well, the pressure of it, the intensity, the lack of praise. And
well, I remember my very first, like, real big stage performance with the company was at the Spoleto Festival in Charleston, and we were doing, like, a reconfigured Connect Transfer, and he was making a trio for Lindsay and Ocean and me, like, literally the day before the show, and then, like, the day of the show, he, like, cut Ocean and was like, it's a duet now, and you and Lindsay will do it, and we were like, okay. So he basically choreographed this duet, and then I had never performed with the company, and like, I was like, Lindsay, can we practice? It's like, literally, we're already painted white in our black unitards, like, about to do the show. And
did we not just make it up?
I don't know how that duet was made, quite frankly, but we were going over our moves, and I was doing, like, an arabesque turn over Lindsay's head, and I kicked her in the head, and Lindsay immediately started crying, and I was like, oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah. And my very first entrance in the piece was, like, a tacked-on additional floor painting solo that happened towards the beginning of the dance. And I went out there and completely blanked. And I did, like, one move over and over and over and over again until I just, like, got up and left.
Did you get in trouble?
Shen Wei didn't really understand. And after the show, he's like, I think you did a good job. He's like, but maybe you do one move too many times. I was like, yeah.
There was so many non-memories like that of having performed and have become completely unconscious. Like, no memory of what happened. I think I probably did something like the choreography, but it was a lot of out-of-body experience.
It's like, it was so intense that I can barely remember it.
I didn't breathe at all.
For years.
It was for years.
And then when did you leave?
I left 2.5 years later in.
It was complicated because he really trusted you, and in fact he developed a whole piece on just Lindsay. He essentially asked the rest of the company to please leave rehearsal for 2 weeks and made a dance for just Lindsay before he invited other people back in to learn what they had created together. So
yes, and during that process, maybe half the time he was saying, I wish you were like Alexa.
Right.
You're not Alexa.
Alexa was a classmate of mine at Purchase College who was a muse of Shen Wei's from the beginning. At any rate.
I mean, I think Shen Wei gave me a lot of performing experience, even if... It's not necessarily the kind of performing that I'm interested in doing, but it was an important thing for me to do. It was important to feel like a lot of people looking at me.
And for any of us who've like been through a conservatory environment or dance school environment, like to just get hired, to get a contract is an instant validation that then allows you like, there's a huge relief because beyond that, it's like, oh, I did it. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. And there were like ecstatic. I remember this when we went to Montreal. Were you there in Montreal?
No.
It was in the winter in Montreal.
So cool.
It was the White Nights Festival. Everything was underground. And we did Folding, and at this piece called Folding, and at the end of Folding, there is a bow that's almost like half as long as the entire piece. The audience stood up, like gave a standing ovation for the entire bow, and it was just chilling. It was like everything that I wanted from that job of just feeling so alive and so pumped by all these people. And it was a huge, huge auditorium. I mean, that was the amazing thing about that job too, is that we performed in
huge auditoriums.
In huge
amazing
houses.
Yeah. Like the Het Music Theater and the Disney Hall and like really amazing theaters.
And the State Theater.
That's where I saw Rite of Spring.
Yeah, we did the opera at State Theater, which was like a whole other thing.
Actually not very fulfilling.
No.
But... But it did all the things that I thought that I wanted and that I did want from being a dancer. It turns out I'm not very interested in that anymore, but at the time, and maybe that's because I checked it off.
Yeah.
You know, I was lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time at that audition to get that job. And
then you worked with like the downtown crew, really. I feel like.
Yeah, so then I did kind of the exact same thing again. I was like, what do I do? Sarah Procopio said, you should go to Holland. So I did. So then I got my MFA.
I remember seeing your MFA piece at CPR.
You did. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, that was an interesting time to go straight from Shen Wei into...
Donna Fay.
Making my own work.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And really trying to, like, mine myself for what I was interested in.
I'm very excited to talk about the piece you did at Dixon Place when we get to it.
Which piece was that?
I curated
with
it.
With Jacob?
Mm-mm. So, but let's talk through. So you do, let's, I like that we're sticking to a chronology. Even though we're all coughing.
Well, okay, so Lindsay, Finnish and Wei, she went away for a year to get her master's degree, and then promptly when you came back to New York, you and I moved in together to that apartment on Coney Island Avenue.
Yeah, and I started Faye's piece.
That's right, and you danced with Faye, and you danced with Miguel, and you danced with Michelle Boulay, and you danced with John Jaspers, and you danced with,
But Jack, we never, like, made anything.
It's true.
Oh, she danced.
We were never in progress.
She danced with Jack as first, second cast to Brianna.
But that's not true, Lindsay. We did make that gala piece for, at the time, PS122, where it was you.
And Burr.
And Burr.
Jack.
And.
When you say we made it, we, like, stood in a studio for a half an hour and you were like, Burr. Put your leg up or something.
No, I for both of you, I was like, let me see you Batma and mirror it. And I was like, great. And now put your hands up, make claw hands, shift them over here. Now do an attitude. Like.
But, and then we were done. And then we did
a long process.
And I think, Susan Sarandon
saw it. Was, you know, it was only like a 3-minute piece. And then you had to come and pick me up at another point and like just carry me around.
Did I really?
Yep. I love whatever happened to your memory. And it's just part of the process.
I don't know. Is it because I had a baby?
I don't know.
Possibly.
I don't know. Well, I mean, you do have a lot. To be a teacher and have a child, and you're still engaged with your making practice. I talked about the piece that I saw at Bard. This very.
It's true. Described it in detail.
I did.
That's nice.
Well, I'm not nice, but I'm kind and truthful.
Lindsay, after all this dancing and dancing for, you know, makers that we all love and admire and doing great works, and I know from an outsider's point of view, like a lot of dancers in New York really admired you as a dancer. Do you feel that? And do you feel a sense of validation from that?
I feel, totally invisible right now.
Yeah.
I feel my performance self is just gone up here. Even though I performed, it's like, when I got pregnant, I was making a piece with Juliana May, who is my dreamboat choreographer. It was amazing to work with her. And in the second piece that we were making together, I got pregnant, and then my due date was, or the show was supposed to happen like a month and a half after my due date. So, so she fired me. No, that's terrible. I mean, of course, I don't mean that in any spiteful way towards Juliana. And I will say that moment, I look back and it's like, wow, that's when it really ended. Like, that was a real break for me, and I didn't fully realize. I mean, I was making a human, so I was consumed with that. And then I had a very difficult birth, and then we quickly moved up to the Hudson Valley, and my husband was very disabled at that point in time. And now we're in a pandemic, and it's like, it feels like if that wasn't happening, I was making a piece on two students at Bard, and it felt like, and I was actually like making dance moves, which is not, has never been of interest to me. But all of a sudden I was interested in that. I was excited by choreography, or just interested in seeing what was coming out of my body. coming out of me, I should say. So I feel when I really think about that, when I really think about that loss, it feels, I don't know where I am as a dancer, artist, person. I don't know what's coming next. I don't know how I'm going to keep performing. I am so accustomed to being, and I love being in a directed, I love being directed. I love pushing up against somebody else's ideas. I love having a container to exercise my own choices inside of. A container that I didn't make. I want somebody else to be responsible for the thing as a whole and to be able to make choices inside of that and to be asked to do things that are outside of my comfort zone that I wouldn't necessarily ask myself to do. So, you know how there's this kind of like toxic positivity happening right now with like, you know, take care of yourself and all the good things that you can do for yourself while you're in isolation. And I'm calling it toxic because it's toxic for me, because I can't, I have spent pretty much my whole life, I shouldn't say, that's too much, that's hyperbole. I've spent a lot of time being in an abusive relationship with myself, specifically in a dance context, and being asked to stay fit and stay in a certain shape and a certain look. So when it's only on me to take care of myself and like privilege feeling good, it's almost impossible for me to do that. So the combination of, it's like extra isolation. It's like from when I got pregnant up until right now, it's like I have removed and removed and removed myself from the identity that I really felt like I came to know myself inside of, which is as a performer.
Before you got, and before that happened, I mean, the piece that I'm recalling that I curated at Dixon Place was, it was a piece, it was a solo, and in it you did various gestures from all of the choreographers you had worked with. And you stopped and you stood in front of some different audience members and said, I'm trying to feel something. And you would go to different audience members and stand in front of them to see if you could feel something from them. And then you went and sat down in the back and you said, I'm just not feeling anything from you. And you left. And I was like, work. And you did. And I remember you being like, I can't believe. And afterwards you were like, I don't know what I just did. And I was like, well, you're talking about your relationship with the audience and what do you want from them? And how does this relationship go? And is it always what happens when the performer asks and actually engages in some way, literally not around and not even about themselves, but about performativity. And it was, but I remember it being, and it was this thing, and I felt in the same way in watching your Holland solo, where there was an edginess to it, and I felt the same way in the solo that I saw at Bard. There, that the process as well of you dealing with spectatorship and that you're being viewed and what that means inside of dance, I like that. There's many narratives about that, and you seem to, it always felt like you were jostling with those narratives, fighting with them.
I mean, yeah, being witnessed in self-discovery is everything. It turns me on. It ignites something in me. It freaks me out. And I love that. So in the absence of that, I don't know what I'm saying about that. I guess you said the word, Jack, you said the word edge. And I think that is really important for me to like push up against.
Well, that's always been my experience of you, Lindsay. Like, I don't know you like Reed knows you, but you have said some very, you have said very grounding things to me, and you have said very direct things to me. And you have said something I'm not going to say on this podcast that was so incredibly direct to me without knowing me very well. And it was why when Brianna was like, I'm off to Europe. And I was like, fuck, someone has to play this part with Reed. And I was like, God, I wonder if Lindsay would do it, because I had such respect for you.
Mm, that's interesting. Sometimes I have a lack of filter and it can really get me in trouble.
I like that.
So
that works for me because then I know where people are. I mean, have you noticed I have a podcast with Reed? It's like I in terms of people being direct, it was also that, and when you were so direct, I did not find you to say it in a cruel way at all. It wasn't mean. There's a difference between saying something mean and saying something and truthful. I mean, one can say something truthfully mean, but it's not what you did. You were just very direct with me, and I liked that. I found it empowering. So
I'm feeling overwhelmed by how much information and history there is potentially to share that we absolutely, there's no way unless there's sort of a 5-part episode. But Lindsay, for those listeners who might have any questions for her, and I'm not ending the episode, but all this to say, you know, you're a licensed Alexander clinician, you have a master's degree, you're a professor at Bard College, you've had like an illustrious dance career, and even with all that, you know, our relationship to dance and performance can be so confusing, and trying to understand what our place in the universe of dance or performance or just sort of being alive is. So, and I think it's a really good story for people who are continually struggling inside of whatever practice they have. And I think it's so great that in the same way that I have, you've continued to move on from each thing as it becomes not important to you or not useful to you anymore.
Well, or even abusive. I mean, I think that there also has to be, and it's why, and it's interesting, Lindsay, because I think, I don't know, for me, as someone who has needed to take in the last few years really giant steps back in ways that I think are opposite to how I am perhaps perceived, that, and it was why I brought up Elena Ferrante, I felt this shattering thing that was happening that I couldn't put a name to, and I didn't know how to talk about what was happening to me as a maker, as a performer with an abuse history, that I found in Elena Ferrante's writing. And it's very, she's really coming at it much definitely from a standpoint of a woman, in terms of the narrator, a woman who's a writer who has a child, and that change, what that changes, but also this friend who's edgy, who is also sort of her. And I think there is something that I find really empowering actually about recognizing the shattering process and being able to withstand it, withstand it and hold onto nothing, actually, to kind of let go into it and see what happens.
Well, it's amazing how many times that can happen.
Yeah.
I think we're, well, I don't want to make a broad sweeping statement, but there is a resilience that is always surprising to me looking back at what I have experienced. And I don't mean to say that it's any worse than anybody else's, but,
Well, I mean, even through us talking through this, when you even think about the way it felt at that Dunkin' Donuts, you know, to that, and that you got through that, I think it's a real, and by that, I mean the psychological state you were in, I think.
So it was bad. It was really bad.
But, you know, Lindsay, I do feel like many dancers and dancers who've dealt with disappointment or have an idea they feel they can't attain, you have a really powerful memory of the joy of dance from your childhood. And I do feel like that kind of like, I mean, I'm being presumptuous, but I know you made a dance where like you played video of yourself dancing around as a child.
That was her Hollins Masters.
Well, piece. Right. So I would say that wasn't I didn't have that memory.
Oh.
That was me looking at a video of myself looking joyful.
Right. It fell through the holes in the cheese.
It fell through the holes in the cheese.
I read it much more in how you're describing it, Lindsay. It was the thing.
And I think that
a very fraught relationship actually with it.
That joy of dance did not come to me until Faye's piece, like later.
But you did speak about having that sense of jolt and excitement with Shenhui, like of the audience response, but that's not necessarily the dancing.
But like fear-based, like born of fear.
Yeah, and that's not really...
Not like I am my full person on stage.
But your relationship to movement in Svi's class, etc., seemed always very positive, and it seemed to feed you in a good way. It wasn't about... I mean, there is obviously a performance element to that kind of class taking.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would be nervous every time I went across the floor.
Well, yeah, you were being watched, Lindsay.
And I felt that, and I loved that. And my relationship to ballet has just done a full... Is it 180?
Sure.
Because it's now you're really
into it. Is it 360? I don't know. Is it that through my...
Well, how did you start? What was the opening feeling?
Right, exactly. Where am I going back to or away from? I would just say, like, that it was a really fraught relationship, and then I moved through that and found freedom and joy in my body and inside of the form, and then had to do it again when I came to Bard and realized that, like, I didn't have a common ground of hating the thing, with the students. I had to just go straight for the love of it. Like, these students are electing to do this thing because they want to. No one is forcing them to. And so that was also kind of a cracking open and a little painful to just have to love it.
Well, and I think, and as an educator, there's something inside of it that there can be things that I don't love, but that I will give the respect to teaching as part of that. I understand it's foundational. And I think that's what's so, it's where I, and it is what's so weird of where my maker self joins my teacher self, but where also my teacher self will divorce from my maker self. So that I can give a foundation, these foundations that I might be like, oh, I'm not into that myself, but you should know that as part of this education.
Right.
There is a kind of, I don't know, I think at least... I think that's the sort of, because so many people that I had growing up who were teachers were so opinionated, and it was honestly, they just taught from themselves and their ego, and I'm trying to be what I didn't have.
Right, and that's when it's a bad teaching day for me, when I can't stop talking.
Oh.
Like, that's also something I'm learning. That's my big learning edge up here.
Well, I'm so glad you... I mean, we don't ever see each other. We see... We teach literally in the same building, and we see each other mainly in our cars passing each other, coming to and from the building, which also speaks to what the work is like as well. It's exhausting. It takes everything.
I think it's really... I think it's so... Like, after this whole story, it's so great for these students to have a teacher who's been through a complicated experience with ballet, teaching them ballet. Because so often, ballet teachers are people who have a sort of uncomplicated experience in terms of having had a very simple ballet career, and then they teach ballet. But you are coming at it with a great deal more knowledge.
But Reed, I don't think anyone has an uncomplicated ballet career.
Well, I mean, I think that with all of your experience and with the kind of feeling that you come to ballet with, both in terms of love and disappointment, I think it makes for a very interesting kind of teaching.
I think so, too. I love it.
Well, and that you have the Alexander training and then worked with people like John and Juliana.
Well, you have all the things. You have classical modern dance training and then more esoteric modern dance and performance, and it's all there.
Yeah, it was fun to perform my own work in front of my students who had only ever seen me teach a ballet class. I mean, it was really wonderful to make something up here because there was like absolutely zero, the stakes were none. And that was always, I was never interested in being a choreographer in New York because I was not interested in climbing that ladder or fighting for my place at all. It was nice to talk to the students afterwards, and they're so smart. They're so smart up here.
I love our students.
I'm so smart.
It's also the joy of teaching in a BA. It's really because you have students who are as invested in your class as going and taking a psych or a chem, and it's that diversity of thought. And I mean, it's sort of this, we're wrapping up at where it started of as I go through, I really adore the Bard students. Yeah. They're
wonderful.
They are one of the few things that make me feel good about the future.
And Lindsay, how are you?
So much.
Go ahead.
It just gives me so much confidence. I mean, now that I've been here for, or, you know, I've seen a class move through freshman to senior, it just gives me so much faith in learning and change, because between freshman and senior, they become themselves in a way that you can never anticipate. They come in as children and they exit as young adults. And it's so moving.
And how are you finding raising your own child in quarantine?
How am I finding that?
Yeah, how's that?
Well, I am very blessed at the moment to have my parents staying here. They're not staying with me, but they take care of her for part of the day. They are about to leave, which is incredibly daunting. But, you know, my toddler is a year and 9 months old, so she is at a point in her life where, you have to be with her all the time. She can't play on her own, obviously, and she also needs she can play for stretches of time or read. She looks at books and... she's super smart. But she wants to interact a lot. Mm-hmm.
She's so smart.
She's so smart. I mean, she's saving me. She's saving me in this moment because she's hilarious and...
Yeah, she's really funny. Really smart.
And she keeps me on a schedule, you know?
Yeah.
I'd probably be an alcoholic if she wasn't here. but I can't. I can't.
Right.
You know, I have to be responsible for her well-being. And...
I do have very fond memories of you binging series on the couch in like a very organized way. you went at them on a mission. I feel that's what you'd be doing in quarantine.
I still do that.
She's just saying she'd be doing that with a fifth.
I see.
Of whiskey.
Well, so I watched. I watched Grey's Anatomy season 15, and then I watched season 14, and now I'm watching 16 because it doesn't matter. Because with that show,
Lindsay, I'm telling you, if you don't have the capacity to read. My Brilliant Friend is on HBO, so you could just watch
it. You can just watch it, actually.
That's great.
It's like kind of as good as the books.
I mean, I watch Grey's because I need a moment in my day where I can just disappear. And so that's what that does for me.
It's so great.
It is great.
Yes.
It's great. It's like this, just the right dose of drama and It's totally inconsequential. It's like nothing.
I don't think I have anything like that. I have to just rewatch things I've already seen, which are, you know, just Dynasty and Twin Peaks. Which I guess I'm kind of a Venn diagram of.
But Jack, we're supposed to watch Mrs. America, so we have to start that soon.
I know, and you sent me your Hulu account.
I did.
I will. After I get my grading done, I can handle new content.
Lindsay,
thank you for speaking with us.
It's been a privilege spending my whole adult life with you, and wish we had more opportunities to dance together, and I always loved, well, I mean, being with you, but also dancing with you. I was always loved in class when people were like, are you guys twins? And I'd be like, yes, we are. And it happened basically every day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, coming into that environment with, like, sort of all the same training, we were like, I guess we are twins.
Right.
And when Vanessa thought that I was you in Liz's piece at the Museum of Art and Design, do you remember that?
Wait, which Vanessa?
Anspa.
Oh, she thought that you were me.
Yeah. In Watch It, because I was dancing up above and they were looking at my reflection. And Vanessa was like, I thought you were Lindsay. I was like, I get it.
I mean,
I really
you two do a really great twin.
We also have all the same measurements. We discovered on a bus in Hungary.
Yeah.
Except for the that shoulders. You have broader
incredible.
Shoulders.
We had all the same circumferences, and we, again, made all of the more tired people in the company feel angry because we couldn't stop laughing.
I'm hopeful. We'll see. I can't say it on the podcast, but I'm hopeful about a new bard hire because it's just wild. It's really.
Wait, what are you talking about?
We can't
talk about that.
I guess you'll tell them off
we
the
can't
air.
Talk about
okay.
it.
Tell her off.
We'll
the
have
air.
To do it off. We'll have to do it off air.
Okay.
But it's I mean, there was even last at your showing, it was so wild because. And I took a photo and sent it to Neil because it was Beth. Gil, you,
Me,
and Tara, who we should have Tara Loren. Is she still going by her maiden name or did?
Yeah,
what's
she's
Tara
Lorenzen.
Lorenzen. Yeah. Okay, Lorenzen.
I just saw her yesterday in the parking lot at Fisher Center. We had an illegal senior dance graduation. Send off where we all stood in the parking lot like more than 6 feet apart with our masks on.
That's so nice.
Wow.
And had a little send off. I mean, it was nice and it was also so depressing.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah, so sad.
The theater department has too many students to do that with.
Right.
We have 70 some students.
Wow.
So it's
graduating?
Yeah.
No.
No, no, no. Not graduate. What am I saying? No, graduating? I can't do this
it's
right
okay.
now.
It's more than five.
Think through. Oh, it is so much more than five, Lindsay. Yes. Yeah. It is. It's a bigger department. But anyhow, I love you. And I love you for many, many reasons. And we didn't talk about it, but, you know, it's... I also got to know you as you dated and then married a very close collaborator of mine for years.
Yeah.
Jacob Slominski.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was during our first piece together, and I cast him because Reed, I was like, I need someone else to be in this show. And Reed was like, well, you should cast Jacob Slominski because it'll be wild.
Is that when we all lived
and
together?
And no one...
Probably.
And no one made me on any residency. Every day, Jacob would tell me a new story that would blow my mind.
It's unbelievable.
I've never had it... I've never, ever experienced it where we would sit down and this is, you know, I'm starting to be hired at Bard now. And so we're at a residency. And I remember every meal we'd sit down and he'd go, did I ever tell you about that time I helped that guy disappear? That's how each meal would begin.
I know.
It managed to last for years.
I know.
We would sit and he'd be like, did I ever tell you about, and I would be like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, it terrified me at first. It was, the stories were
it's
just
incredible.
So absurd.
Are you like, who, are you lying?
It's
or
incredible.
Are you
and also, mm-hmm. also made, you know, the way that your piece made me uncomfortable, that I curated at Dixon Place is a way that his piece made me feel so uncomfortable at the Museum of Arts and Design. And we can't talk about it now, but truly one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, we'll have to have Jacob on.
We'll talk about that when we have Jacob on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. In the meantime, Lindsay, I love you.
We love you, Lindsay, and we'll hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, in somehow. Some way.
Skeptical.
I mean, I just read about like returning to dance classes, something on the internet that was like, well, you can't be going across the floor because you're in somebody's slipstream of droplets.
Work.
Yeah.
So
stand in place, everybody.
Stand
Work
by.
In place.
It's a real, like, there's your 6-foot circle to stand in.
Everyone's going to get really good at adagio.
And wipe it down at the end.
Frappes. We're going to work on frappes because no one can do them.
Let me tell you what. I'm in better shape than I've been in many years from having standing in place and doing Cunningham every day.
I believe that, Reed. I'm so impressed with your videos. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm trying.
Doing
Reed
some
is,
really tricky
Reed is
stuff.
Really keeping it up.
Keeps me not dead.
I love you, Lindsay. Listeners, we loves you, and you can find out more about Lindsay via her Instagram or through the bar website.
That's something really to know, amazing. And those are really important videos to watch. Lindsay Walker Clark on Instagram.
I have commented a fair amount of times on how amazing she is, and when I got to hang out with her that day, I was like, she's brilliant.
Okay, you guys, watch our YouTube Lives on Tuesday nights, and we'll see you soon.
We loves you.